You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. Hi everyone, I hope you're staying safe. Tasmania is currently about a fingernail away from some form of lockdown. It's a very strange time to be living through. A very domestic apocalypse so far, which is preferable to one involving deserts and spiky weapons. But it's still not a lot of fun for anyone. And I know that. We're doing okay. We're very lucky. Our life has not massively changed, except in the ways it really dramatically has. And of course, we have the kids home all the time, which has its stresses, but I'm actually really enjoying right now. Times being what they are, it was much more stressful when all this was going on and they were still at school. So I plan to keep podcasting through it all. One of the ways I can work from home, and I'm really hoping that other publishing projects won't be curtailed too badly, though I am prepared for the fact that things are not as they were, and it will depend from day to day and week to week what services are available when trying to make books. It makes me realise how much I have taken for granted the last few years. Speaking of projects, my Kickstarter is heading into its final week. We've had a very quiet middle of the campaign, due largely to me feeling really weird about any kind of promotional activity, so I have kept it fairly gentle because it's not like people really want to talk about anything that isn't pandemic related, and fair enough too. I'm coming out of hibernation now for the last 7 days. I do want to push it. I'm going to give the project its best chance. I'm well aware its chances are likely I'm going to have a higher percentage of default payments than usual with Kickstarter, largely because a lot of people's financial situation has changed. So I'm very cautious of that. I want the project to still be viable. I believe it will be. I have a lot of cushion built in, but, you know, the more orders at this stage, the better. And yeah, I want to reach my stretch goals. I had 7 new backers today after nothing for a week. It really cheered me up. So there's that. So keep in mind, we have a week to go. If you want a fancy copy of my next book release, Castle Charming, or the pretty enamel pin designed by Kathleen Jennings, or any of the other cool merch on offer, pledge now. If we hit $6,000 this week, I'll be able to commission new illustrations from Katie Shuttleworth. So you will be helping 2 freelance creators. And if we reach that stretch goal early enough, I might even release another stretch goal. And the next one, the one I haven't told anyone about yet, that one's really exciting. So we'll see how we go. If you can't stretch your finances to it right now, don't worry about it. There will be other opportunities. I'm going to have a backer kit open and that sort of thing later on. So, you know, if it's not possible right now, there may be an opportunity later in the month. But if you can, you know, spare $5 towards the ebook, or 15 if you want the enamel pin. I think a lot of you really want the enamel pin. That would be lovely. But otherwise, you know, the book will be available in the future. It will be on sale, not necessarily the Kickstarter edition, but it will be available if you really need to read it later on. You will not miss out on too much. Just, you know, the sparkly, shiny extras. I really like the sparkly, shiny extras. Okay, so that's that. You can find Castle Charming on Kickstarter. And when I next speak to you, we'll be about a day and a half, I think, away from it all closing. If I've done my maths right. The chances are very high I've not done my maths right. Okay. In the meantime, we have Kissing Basilisks, and I hope you enjoy it. Chapter 4. This used to be Ferd's Beach. Most kids, Ferd knew, didn't grow up with a private beach a stone's throw from their house. It wasn't technically a private beach, but he knew better than to be pedantic about ownership when you had a beauty like this on your doorstep. There was a strip of four enormous houses at the far end of the suburb that he had once overheard a fellow student describe as Richie McRichtown, which just about summed it up. Each of the houses was not only massive, but surrounded by epic gardens, a stupid luxury this close to the city. Two of the four had tennis courts. Three of the four had outdoor swimming pools, lined with artisanal mosaic tile. The fourth, Ferd knew, had an entire underground swimming pool, to make up for not having the open-air one. All four houses had high-end magical security wards, water views, and a direct path to Basilisk Beach. While the beach was not technically private in any official sense, the nearby wards of the houses meant that if you did not belong to one of the four families who owned this end of town, or a guest of a family member, you would not be able to set foot on this particular sheltered stretch of land without feeling deeply uncomfortable, like sand crabs were scratching up and down your entire body. Ferd wasn't sure what would be worse as he touched down on the sand, astride Sage's broomstick. Being rejected by the wards because he didn't belong to number 3 Bellingbrook Grove anymore, or not feeling the "you don't belong here" wards because his magic was gone. His magic wasn't gone, and apparently no one had officially revoked his family status. The sand crunching softly under his feet felt like home. He could fly again, actually fly, instead of being tagged along on a broomstick by a mate taking pity on him. That was something to add to his list to be happy about later, once he was done freaking out. Ferd had spent many hours right here in his early teens, relishing that he had access to this place so close to home and yet reasonably private. The houses were surrounded by leafy trees and built up on such an angle that their water views were of the ocean itself, not the beach. You could not see anything but the furthest edge of the sand from any of the windows. Vale and Nightshade loved hanging out here, making the most of the implied invitation that came from being his friend. Nightshade had actually lived in one of the Bellingbroke Grove Seaview mansions as a kid, though after the divorce it was sold to a retired Hollywood actor. Nightshade and his mother lived in the penthouse suite of the Morgana Hotel from the age of 8, before Ferd and his family even moved here. Vale's father, Victor, owned an older and darker house, deeper into the same leafy suburb, laden with heavy warlock history and lacking in beach views. Every summer, after the age of 14, Vale basically lived on this beach, with Ferd, in a series of increasingly tiny bikinis. The three bitchy teens would hide from the sharp sunshine under massive unfolding parasol tents, eating ice cream, sneaking beers, and complaining about the world. My beach, he thought now, feeling the sand under his feet. He abandoned his shoes and socks and Sage's broomstick and his jacket in a pile, and took off, feeling his way back into his old sanctuary. As he walked, he left dark footprints behind him, not just imprints in the sand. Veins of darkness bled from his feet as Ferd walked towards the water. Shadows. He knew what to do with them, knew how to manipulate them, twist them into tools. He knew how to roll shadows thin, how to sharpen them, how to feed back on them to build his power. He'd been working on these skills and techniques his whole life. The first nearly 2 years at Belladonna University was a revelation of the power he could wield. Shadowmancy was one of the most versatile and potentially dangerous forms of magic. Anything you could do magically, you could do with a shadow. He'd done without it all for the last year and a bit, the last 14 months. His world had become all about making do without magic, accepting there was nothing left, building a new life that belonged entirely to him, not to his family or his magical heritage. Could he do this again? Could he sink into the magic and trust it to stay with him forever? Did he even want that? Ferd had no idea how long he stood on the beach, agonizing about it all. Eventually he heard Sage's voice behind him, and something tightened in his stomach, then released. He wasn't alone anymore. That was a start. "Hey, mate," said Sage gently, approaching like Ferd might be a guard dog about to bite. "So, if I get a parking ticket for leaving my beat-up old van in a street where only beautiful Italian sports cars and tiny Japanese hybrids are allowed, you'll spot me, right?" Ferd laughed a little too hard. "Sure, but around here they don't fine you money. You'll get a designer haiku on your windshield for the first warning, and a fireball hex if you do it again." "Good to know." Sage came closer, circling around until he was within Ferd's line of sight. He held a keep cup loosely in one hand. Ferd could smell the coffee inside. Ferd knew if he looked back, he would see evidence that Sage had avoided stepping on his darkened footprints, sensibly steering clear of the shadows. Sage's power was fire and force and light. He'd have been a shit shadowmancer, but he wasn't an idiot. "How you doing, man?" asked Sage. Ferd laughed again, and this one was closer to a sob. "I'll let you know." Sage looked up and down the sweep of the beach. "I drank a cup of coffee," he said after a minute, "so I'm a bit dulled. I can't see it like I might if... but I can feel it. The shape of your magic, the edges of it, when did it come back?" "Pretty much just now. This morning." Ferd's voice came out flat. "Why did this feel so devastating? Why wasn't he throwing a party?" Part of him wanted to grab that keep cup off Sage and down the coffee in one gulp, to put off having to deal with this for a little longer. He was a few hundred metres from his family home. He could go in and see them right now. They would know. They would see. And they would be the ones throwing a frickin' party. The whole last year could be washed away in an instant as if it never happened. If his family was good at anything, it was ignoring uncomfortable truths. This would become a blip they never talked about. "Want to talk about it?" asked Sage. "Nope." "Right." The thing about Sage, the really great thing about Sage, was that he got it. He dealt with so much awful family shit in his own past. He never assumed it was all going to be fine. He never said, "This probably isn't as bad as you think." Not that Hebe ever said that sort of thing, but Ferd knew she had to think it sometimes. How could she not? She came from a happy, loving family. They talked about their problems when they had them. They supported each other, no matter what. She had no idea what it was like to be a Chauvelin. To be loved conditionally, if at all. "Want to hear a story?" Sage asked after a moment, dropping to the sand. It was still early. Going to be a hot one, probably. But the sun hadn't started setting fire to the sand yet, and they were close to the shade of the trees. The ocean was clear blue, so sharp it hurt the eyes. "Okay," said Ferd after a moment. "Tell me a story. You show me yours and I can pretend mine doesn't exist for a little longer." Thank you for listening to Sheep Might Fly. You can follow me on Facebook. Sorry, I lost all my notes. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. But right now, you have 8 days to pledge to my Kickstarter. You know it makes sense. See you next week.